When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Another great episode here of the GM Shuffle coming up, including Jerry Jones talking about the Super Bowl, Peyton Eli. That's right. ESPN's been looking for the Manning to head up Monday Night Football. Now they've got the Mannings. We'll tell you about that. Brady playing through an MCL, AFC West preview, and Aaron Rodgers and the Packers still no closer to a deal. Plus, we'll get Mike's review of seeing the boss once again. We begin, though, with a little bit of basketball as the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Suns to win the NBA championship. First time in 50 years they've got a title, and Giannis, the Greek freak, was incredible, dropping 50 points in the win. One of the great finals MVP performances you'll ever see. An amazing scene outside of the arenas. They had 65,000 fans. It gives me a little bit of pause during a pandemic, but hell, it looked like it was a Euro scene. I mean, the fans were going wild, and good for them being down 0-2 early in the series, Mike, coming back to win four in a row. We'll tie this to football and franchises and winning culture in just a second, but it's just how about Milwaukee's resilience? They were down 0-2. I thought they were done. Instead, they came roaring back to win four straight.
You know, I think it's a tribute to their best player, right? I always believe this, and I don't think coaches really pay enough attention to this, but when your best player embraces coaching, when your best player works the hardest, when your best player wants to improve, when your best player has a little bit of an asshole in him and won't tolerate slacking, that doesn't take the path of least resistance, the sky's the limit. I mean, the sky is the limit. And people always say, you know, Brady, Belichick, who was better, right? Well, the reality of it is Brady's willingness to allow Belichick to coach him hard, to allow Belichick to demand from him, to allow Belichick to treat him as one of the players, not as a superstar, was Brady's greatest achievement. It wasn't a touchdown pass in Super Bowls, none of that. It's that ability that Brady allowed him to do, which is what Giannis has allowed the Milwaukee Bucks to do. So now all the other players become great. I hate this idea that, well, you know, if you just surround a great player with better players, he'll be better. No. Great players make other players great. Like, you don't have to surround great players. Great players make the other ones great. But you have to surround them with the right players, the players that'll work hard and do the things you have to do. And when your best player does, like Giannis, I mean, to me, this is another example of, you know, technology's changed. Kids have changed. They don't watch the games anymore. They don't do this. They don't do that. They're selfish. They're narcissistic, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, the formula for winning hasn't changed since Red Auerbach coached the sport, since Paul Brown started with the Ohio State Buckeyes back in the 40s. The formula for winning then and the formula for winning now is still the same. Your best player has to work the hardest.
And that's why he's the guy with whom everyone revolves around. They appreciate his effort. And it's an amazing story, Mike, because he's humble. I think he's down to earth. And he did what so many other guys don't do, which is he didn't jump ship. He worked through. He was resilient. They had adversity. You know, lost the Raptors. They came up short a couple of times, but instead they're overcome. People thought the Nets would be the favorites. Instead, the Nets are the favorites for next season. Bucks don't care. But overall, listen, Milwaukee, Phoenix, I'm sure the ratings are going to be a disaster for ESPN. But the good news is this. If you're a fan of the little guy, if you're a fan of seeing a bottom feeder franchise that's able to turn it around, you can appreciate a small market success like this. What do you think of when you see a Milwaukee and Phoenix, two teams you do not associate with NBA excellence, actually making the NBA final? How'd they do it?
Well, I think, look, the process started the same year that Giannis got drafted. Giannis was the 15th selection in the draft, and everybody said he was a project. And, and I tweeted this out, everybody who believes the process was successful, to me, has no idea, really, that you have no idea about how to build a team. You have no idea. If you really think losing to winning matters, you have no idea. Because it's just been proven out. Milwaukee didn't lose. Milwaukee started when the process started. When they picked Giannis, their process started. And they got better in a hurry. You said, well, nobody knew Giannis was going to be that good. Okay, here's my argument to that. Here's my argument. If you believe you want to tank, if losing is the first principle of what you're trying to build, which is what the process was about, we're going to tear this down to get superstars, right? Okay, then why wouldn't you take a guy at the 11th pick overall, or you traded Drew Holiday for the 6th pick, right, to take Nerlens Noel? Why wouldn't you take a guy who had the most upside? Because just say Giannis ends up being a bust. Say Giannis was one of those guys that had great upside, but he never manifested itself. What do you care? What do you care? You want to lose anyway. You want to lose anyway. You're trying to lose. So take the guy that has the most reward on him. Maybe he has the highest risk. But no, you don't do that. You take Nerlens Noel because you think he's a better player than Drew Holiday. You're going to build your defense around him. And you take Mike or Carter Williams over Steven Adams or whomever. I mean, the draft wasn't great. So to me, the fact that Giannis entered the draft at the same time of the process is exactly why all these process people, and they're all over Twitter, they all call me an idiot. I love it. It's great. I embrace it. Tell me more. Tell me more why I'm an idiot. Tell me, please. Please tell me. Because you're the fucking idiot who you actually think this worked. Because you're no closer to winning a title than you were in 2013. And these two teams went ahead and didn't even try to lose. So call me the idiot. Just trust the reality. Analyze it. Look at it. The biggest problem with the process was the guy running the process can't evaluate talent. He can't evaluate talent. If you can't evaluate talent, does it matter if you lose? Does it matter if you have the 3rd pick overall? You're picking Okafor. Go back and read the quotes about Okafor when they picked him. Don't tell me they were trying to lose at that point. Read Hanke's manifesto when he left. So this whole idea, if this was a court case, literally, if this was a court case, I don't care if you had Johnny Cochran, F. Lee Bailey, I don't give a fuck who you had on your side of the court, I'd win that case 1,000%. Because anybody in reasonable mind would understand that the process didn't work. It's been a complete failure.
I love the reference, by the way, to the lawyers. Cochran, remember F. Lee Bailey? Barry Schreck was great. The OJ's defense team. God, those guys were... Robert Shapiro. All those lawyers. Lombardi will take them all down, baby.
Come on, bring them all. What's that guy that was... Remember they did the Lee Harvey Oswald trial, the guy there?
Jim Garrison.
And I'm reading this book about... the guy that actually started the California, the Palimony thing, Marvin Belli. So Marvin Belli represented Jack Ruby. I don't know if people remember this. So it's a book about Jack Ruby's trial. It's written by Dan Abrams. I would not say it's a great book. It's a good book if you're interested in the Kennedy assassination. They try to make all these arguments why Jack Ruby, the main argument, the main thesis of the book, AD, is that they're trying to say that because Jack Ruby had his two beloved dogs in the car, there was no way he was planning on killing Oswald. Seriously. I'm not buying that. I would have left Bella's ass in the car if I was going to go shoot somebody. She would have figured it out. That would have guaranteed they would have been taken care of. But anyway, that's a whole other story. I would never leave Bell in the car, period. But that's the whole other story. But Marvin Belli, I'd take his ass on the process, too, in his slick Italian suits and all that. I'd take them all on. There's no chance you're winning. There's no chance you're winning. You got no evidence in your case. Because what you picked was, you picked two players, Simmons and Embiid, who don't have the mental toughness. Because you can't evaluate mental toughness.
Yeah, and you look at the evaluation of Milwaukee, it's not just Giannis, Booker, Middleton, only one lottery pick in Brook Lopez, and a small market team comes up big. A great story for the Milwaukee Bucks, fear the deer triumphant. Let's get to the football, but stay in Wisconsin. According to Adam Schefter, Aaron Rodgers turning down a 2-year extension offer from the Packers this offseason. You and I have said all along, hey, a lot of this is money, okay? A lot of this can be solved by money. The deal, sources said, would have tied Rodgers to the Packers 5 more seasons, and he would have been the highest paid quarterback and player in football. I love this move from Green Bay. All right, you're pissed off. You hate Gunquint's fine. Here's a ton of money. Except Rodgers apparently said no. He hasn't gotten together with any of the receivers. Training camp schedule will begin July 28th. Strained relationship, well documented. I'm a little surprised, Mike. I thought money would solve it. What do you think?
Well, as Johnny Sack eloquently said when they were talking about Jenny's mole on her ass, again with the money? Like, is it always about the fucking money?
Yes.
I mean, yes, it's always about the money, Johnny. Like, seriously. Look, I don't know what the end game is for Rodgers. And Bob McGinn reported this two months ago, you know, for The Athletic that Rodgers turned down an extension. Now, I don't know if Bob had the details of it being the highest paid player in football. I don't know what it is. And unless you see what the deal was, what it looks like, I don't know if you can really say we turned down this deal. You know, you got to look at the deal and how it's all laid out. But, like, where are we going with this? Where is Rodgers going with this? They're not going to fire Brian Gutekunst. Why would they can't do that? So where are they? What's his end game? What's he going to try to do? What's up David Dunn's sleeve? Which, you know, is I'm not sure there's anything ever up David Dunn's sleeve other than just trying to manipulate the press and posture it, you know. And so my sense of it is look, at the end of the day, George Young, who's going in the Hall of Fame this year, eloquently said, football players play football. And if you want to play football, then I think you're going to have to play for the Packers. I can't imagine the Packers, after offering to make him the highest paid player and quarterback in the league, would actually just would trade him away. I can't believe they would do that. It sets a bad precedent.
And that's why I'm with you, Mike. I think what happens is this. Either Rodgers is going to accept the deal and have a change of heart, or he's sitting out. I'm with you. They're not trading this guy. You're not going to get value for him. He's had, in the last 3 seasons, 99 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Like, where the hell are you going to get a guy like that? Where are you going to get value for that? No matter who you trade him to, you're going to get torched. You're going to get eviscerated because you're not going to get value back. So you offered him a ton of money. He said no. I think now it's a stalemate. I think now he sits out.
He has to. I mean, at least he has to sit out for a while until he has to start paying back. Like, you know, and look, we're gonna read about it. I mean, these agents are so good at manipulating the media. We said this on the podcast. We would see Ben Simmons shooting 3-pointers, and we did. You know, we said this on the podcast. We would read a statement from Ben's statement saying how embarrassed he was and how he's going to work extra hard. We saw that, right? We're going to read, you know, we know how they manipulate the media because, look, the media is always looking for stories, you know, like Tom Hagen said, you know, like Michael said to Tom Hagen, we got people in the newspaper, but they would like a story like this, right? Oh, yeah, they would. Well, they'd like a story like Aaron Rodgers. So Dave Dunn's always going to be able to get a story out there about him. It's no problem. But the reality of it is the Packers have the cards. And I don't see the Packers folding their cards up. I don't see them doing that. Because why? Because what message does that send to the other guys in the locker room?
One of the great Tom Hagen moments, now that you got me thinking of it, was when Tessio says, can you get me off the hook, Tom, for old time's sake? And he goes, can't do it, Sally. Tell Mike it was nothing personal. I always liked him.
I love that he went Sally on him, too. He didn't even call him Sal. I love that he called him Sally.
That's such a good moment. All right, coming up next. Chiefs have made it back-to-back Super Bowls. Can they make it 3 in a row, or can a team in their own division knock them off? Our full AFC West preview is next.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. I mean, these second-round playoffs have been unreal, and we have the conference finals now on the horizon. Make sure you get all those futures bets in before the value disappears. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code SHUFFLE. That's code SHUFFLE for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
We're going through the divisions here on the GM Shuffle. AFC West preview is up, and we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs. Last season went 14-2. They made the Super Bowl. Didn't win it, though. Over-under win total this time is 12. You look at this team, Mike, and listen, no first-round pick, no real moves necessarily, but they have improved the offensive line. They're going to try to hold and protect Mahomes better. They clearly realized, all right, we've got to use better protection. Mahomes has a massive contract extension. Barring an injury, he's going to be the best quarterback in football. What's standing in the way right now of the Chiefs, another AFC title? Because I look at over-under win total of 12, I'm taking the over, 13-4.
Yeah, I mean, like, my question to anybody who's thinking about taking the under here is, where did they come up with five losses? Who beats them? I mean, who beats them? The formula to beat them is not complicated. It's not complicated, but it's very hard to do. So how do you beat the Chiefs? Well, you've got to really understand how to rush the passer. You really have to understand how to rush Mahomes, because if you have your two defensive linemen run up the field against Mahomes and they're past the quarterback, you've got no chance, okay? So the first step, if I were the Denver Broncos, let's say, and I was Vic Fangio, I would spend most of my OTA days and most of my minicamp days with the defensive line practicing how we're going to rush the passer against Patrick Mahomes. We're going to get inside penetration. Everything's going to be B gap inside. Everything's coming at him. We're going to flush him to his left. We're going to force him to away from his throwing hand. Everything is going to be, it's going to be like the Rockettes on Broadway. It's going to be a dance routine that we're going to rehearse starting back in April. Okay, so that's number one. That's how you have to beat them. Most teams won't even spend a zero time. Most defensive coordinators spend zero time with the rush plan. They spend zero time. It's the most important part of the game, but they'll spend zero time. They spend a ton of time with the coverage. They spend no time understanding that the front can control the quarterback. They spend zero time with that. Okay, that's A. B, you better have corners. And you better have corners that can win one-on-one, because you're going to double Tyreek Hill. So the other guys are going to be on an island. And they've got to win those matchups, whether it's against Robinson, whether it's against Hardy, whoever it's against, you know, whoever the receivers they trot out there, the other guys, you got to win those matchups. You got to have a safety that's big enough that can cover Kelce one-on-one, okay? You got to be able to cover him one-on-one. You got to be able to take him out of the game. And then you have to have two safeties that can really tackle, because you're going to be light in the box, and they're going to run the ball at times, and you got to come up and make those tackles so that the back doesn't take off and take a four-yard gain into a 40-yard gain. So that's how you got to play them. And then you've got to limit their possessions to 9. You've got to go for it a lot on fourth down. You've got to make sure that you always control the middle 8 against them. And you've got to be able to score points. You can't settle for field goals. You can't settle for 3 points. You got to get touchdowns. And you got to take some calculated risk. All right, so that all being said, tell me five teams that can do that on their schedule. I can't find them. I can't find five teams that can do that. So I'm on the over. I mean, look, I think Orlando Brown's in for a rude awakening. Here's why. Orlando Brown was in a run-based offense last year at left tackle. Okay, so when he shifted from right tackle to left tackle, he's playing for the Baltimore Ravens. Everybody's worried about the run. So the defensive linemen are a little bit going to play their first to second step very conservatively. When you're playing Kansas City, your ass wants to get going. You're rushing the passer. I think it's going to challenge his foot speed. That's why Kansas City didn't extend him. And I think that's going to be the issue. So I like him on the over.
Ultimately, just so many weapons. And I think Mahomes, listen, the Super Bowl, he was not at full health. We all saw that. If he's healthy, he's obviously an incredible player. And like you said, with those weapons around him, there's just so many different ways Andy Reid can pick you apart. That takes us to the Raiders, who last season went 8-8. Over-under win total of 8. 8 is enough. 2021 first round pick, Alex Leatherwood, the offensive tackle out of Alabama. The defense last year, just brutal. Allowed the third most points per game in 2020. You're wondering about the health of Josh Jacobs. Derek Carr, you and I were saying, you know, midway through the season, we're like, man, Derek Carr's really progressed. Gruden's got him rolling. Can he build upon a successful 2020? Over under win total eight feels pretty good to me, Mike. That's why they pick it right there. I don't know if it's over or under. It feels like a push to me. How about you?
I think it's a push too. AD, guess for me, what's Gruden's record after he won the Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's team?
I would guess he's a 500 coach.
He's 64-82 as a coach.
Wow.
43.8% win percent.
Almost 20 games under 500. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and he makes $100 million. I mean, it's one of the great con jobs of all time. I mean, Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, actually, you know, he believes Gruden was the reason why the Raiders turned the corner in the early 2000s. The reason we won had nothing to do with John. It had everything to do with the guy who lives on 25th Street here in Ocean City. His name's Rich Gannon. It had everything to do with him. You know, he's the guy you should give $100 million to. I mean, Gruden's 19-29, I think, since his reached 10 games below 500 since he's been there.
Brutal.
If you go back, if anybody does a thorough job on studying John Gruden's career since the Super Bowl win, you would say, not a good drafter, can't develop a young quarterback, always the team gets worse the longer he coaches them. I mean, so will they ever be disastrous five? No, typically not. He's a good offensive coach, no denying that. You know, so I think they're 8-9, 9-8. I wouldn't play this play. I don't see them getting over the hump. I don't know how. I would love to have taped. I wish the hell I was in a goddamn Secret Service or CIA where I could tape offices. Because if you could have taped, and I would testify this on a court of law. I can't prove this. I cannot prove this. But if you were in the Raider offices the week they were playing the Chargers, if you could have mic'd Gruden up for that week, he would have been ripping Gus Bradley's ass the whole week. Oh, look at this guy. Plays one front, one coverage, man. How's he going to get away with that? Blah, blah, blah. You know, he doesn't do anything. It's not creative. Blah, blah, blah. We're going to go after him. Beats him all the time. Then hires him. Like, how is this even possible? Like, it's one of the easiest game plans Gruden had all during his career in Vegas. He knows he's going to be in one front. Knows he's going to be in one coverage. He runs all his beaters against him. He scores a ton of points, and then he says, oh, by the way, come join me in Vegas and improve my defense, which sucks, but you're going to make it better. Because why? Here's the rationale behind it. We're going to make it better because we're going to simplify what we do. Okay, that's great. Good idea. We'll get the players to play fast. Good idea. We'll simplify it. Great. Love it. They suck. So they'll play faster, but they still suck. Like, they're not good enough. Like, you're going to have to do different things for them, because if they have to play just on their ability, they're going to get smoked. I think they're 8-9, 9-8 team. That's what I think.
And the crazy thing is, like you said, because of that contract, Gruden's going to be another 500 coach. And it's like, well, whatever, another year, got another $100 million, because that's that contract. So
well, that's what you get for $100 million. You know, and he'll tell everybody he loves them. Everybody in the building's miserable. Just it's impossible working for him.
He loves them all. Chargers at 7-9. Over under win total of 9. This is intriguing. You got Rashawn Slater, offensive tackle out of Northwestern, was a 2021 first round pick. They got the center, Corey Linsley. Herbert, you and I both love. He's trying to become a star quarterback, was already a star in his rookie season. You got a new head coach in Brandon Staley. I want to take the over, Mike. 10-7 feels a little aggressive, but what the hell? I'll take the over on the Chargers. I'll believe in Herbert. How about you?
I believe in Herbert, too. And you know, I wrote this column. I don't think they're not going to put it up on the Athletic until next week. I wrote it yesterday. And I wrote the column about the effect of Justin Herbert on Tua. Like, you're the Miami Dolphins. You just opened up this brand new facility. It's beautiful. I mean, Stephen Ross, I mean, whatever you think of him as an owner, he's like, I think his career, he's a 46% winning percentage as an owner. But I mean, he's put money into the team. There's no denying it. And he's put $600 million into the team. And this facility is $135 million. It looks just absolutely gorgeous. So when you're looking at it and you're doing it, And you analyze, you know, where their teams go in Miami, that being, is it's just natural that they're going to want to compare it to Herbert to compare it to Tua. So let's just take third down last year. This is how good Herbert was. Last year on third down, okay, Tua was 33 for 66 for a 4.65 yards per attempt. 4.65 yards per attempt. Throwing a lot of checkdowns, my man. Like, you and I could come back. I could spit on my two fingers and get 4, 6, 5 yards, you know? Like, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He converted 31% of those third downs for first downs, okay? Let's go to Herbert. Same third down. Okay, Herbert was 98 for 156. He averaged 7.46 yards per attempt, 14 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and he converted third downs at a 46.8%. That's freaking remarkable. That's a rookie. That's why we're all in love with this guy. He did something. I mean, maybe Tua will come back next year and improve on those numbers, but what Herbert did, if he improves on his numbers, we're talking about a generational talent. And I think changing Gus Bradley for Brendan Staley, being more complex, being more of a disguised coverage team, being able to do different things, I think it's going to be really improve their team. And I think that the fact that if they manage the game correctly, they don't give away games. I mean, they were in a lot of games last year for being 7-9. I mean, they had Tampa on the ropes. They couldn't close it. So I like that to go over. You know, I don't hold my breath on it because I think sometimes the Chargers just make some stupid mistakes. I hope they don't, but I do think that.
Yeah, maybe the addition by subtraction of no Anthony Lynn. Broncos, meantime, last season, 5-11, over under win total is 7.5. They got the cornerback, Ronald Darby, Patrick Surtain, the cornerback out of Alabama, as their first round pick. Some thought that they could get Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, it would be an enormous upgrade at quarterback. 7.5 over in a win total. Another guy, Mike, that we always see skate is John Elway. I mean, the guy has such a tarnish-free reputation, and yet we're still waiting for Denver to break through, especially when it comes to a quarterback. How do you feel about 7.5? Oh, if you take the over, you're basically saying they're an 8-9 team. I don't know if I can do that, considering they're coming off of 5 wins.
I'm going to go over here because I think, AD, I think they're really talented. I think they're really talented. They don't have a quarterback. But, you know, they have what I described of the kind of team that you could play, that could play Kansas City. They have it. I mean, they have it. And so, you know, now, will their quarterback, if their quarterback, if they just get average play out of their quarterback, if they just get, you know, just decent, he doesn't turn the ball over, he makes the easy plays, and they play to their strength and they stay healthy, I think they go over that, easily go over that, because they're really good. Their offensive line has improved with Munchak. Even Garrett Bowles. I mean, Garrett Bowles had 17 penalties 2 years ago. He's down to 4 last year. I mean, Munchak's done an incredible job with this team. The problem is they've got to get more production out of their quarterback. Can they do it? I mean, I like them better than the Raiders. The Raiders beat them twice last year. The last time they beat them was on a 2-point play. But Denver wasn't healthy. Denver's skill players are good. They've got everything going for them except the one key position.
And that's why, if they could get Rodgers, all of a sudden they're a Super Bowl contender. But that is a long way away from happening. Coming up next, Tom Brady continues to defy logic when it comes to age and health. The legend grows, plus the Mannings going to ESPN. That's next. More laurels and more reason to laud Tom Brady. He played last season with a torn MCL in his left knee. He suffered the injury in his final season with the Patriots, gradually worsened during his first year in Tampa, according to a report. Wasn't listed on the injury report all season, and he goes out there and throws over 4,600 yards, 40 touchdowns, leads the Bucs to victory. Most of their guys, Mike, could say this is shocking, but in terms of Brady, his toughness and his grit has always been a huge part of him. So I got to admit, I saw the story and I kind of just shrugged. I'm like, yeah, that's what Tom Terrific is all about.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I don't know how the Bucs don't get fined for keeping him off the injury list. I mean, they got to pay a fine for that, right? I mean, he was never on the list. I mean, Brady's remarkable. I mean, we played Miami in an opening game in 2014, and he was on the injury list with a calf, but that calf was serious. I mean, I don't know if he tore it or if he just, you know, I mean, calves, you just don't sprain a calf. You either tear it or you don't. I mean, and that son of a bitch got out there and played. He, you know, we got up to a big lead at halftime, and you know, the sun melted us away, and they beat us on the fourth quarter. But the reality of it is, I mean, look, the guy's toughness, mental and physical. Like we started this podcast, the fact that he allows the coach to coach him is his greatest strength. For all his ability, the fact that he allows the coach to coach him, that's what separates these players and you know, his mental toughness, because he's so mentally tough. You know, Parcells used to say this all the time. offensive linemen have to have the ability to focus when they're in pain. Now, he would equate that to intelligence. So if an offensive lineman had a really low test score, he would, you know, he would feel like that perhaps that guy might be in the weight room, the training room. That guy might not be able to have too many false starts. He can't focus when his elbow hurts. He can't focus when his knee's throbbing. And it's a hard thing to do. It's really hard to do. And you measure mental toughness by being able to block out the pain and the disrupt and the other parts that are happening to you to focus on what you really have to do. That's a hard thing to do. Joel Embiid can't do that. There's no fucking chance, right? There's no chance.
We go
no
back.
Chance.
Yeah.
Neither can Simmons. Yeah. I mean, it all goes back to superstar. Oh my God, he's the greatest. Oh, everybody goes Dick Vitale. Oh, he's the greatest. Yeah, he's the greatest athlete, if that's what we're doing. You know, for a big man to move like that, yeah, but a great player has these intangibles that you get from somewhere, your mama, your dad, somebody. Brady's got them.
Mental toughness, no one can deny that about Brady, and that hunger and that ambition, it remains. The hunger and ambition for ESPN was in trying to get one of the Peyton Manning to be a part of their Monday Night Football broadcast, right? They wanted him there for years. We kept hearing, okay, $10 million a year, whatever it is. Heck, by the end, we thought it might be $10 million a game. Ultimately, they've got not just Peyton Manning, but the Mannings. But it's not full-time, but it is on Monday Night Football. How about this? 10 games in each of the next three seasons. Say, three games a year. The Manning brothers, that's right, not Cooper, Peyton and Eli are going to host an alternate Monday Night Football broadcast on ESPN. The mega cast on ESPN2, a more relaxed feel, talking about broader topics instead of just the usual play-by-play. When I was at ESPN, Mike, I really saw the rise of this, the advent of it, particularly with college football. And I always thought it was great. You'd have the national championship with Chris and Herbie, but then on ESPN2, you'd have a lot of the coaches talking. You'd have other, you know, players at Tess and Adam Amin would do stuff on the field. Like, there was always different ways to watch a game. In today's world, in which so many want different options, I think it's smart to have options. Like on baseball at ESPN, they've got, again, the traditional broadcast. They'll do a StatCast, more numbers, more sabermetrics. I love watching those guys. So I'm amused by it, first of all. They finally got Peyton Manning, but it's only three games a year over 3 years, and it's his brother, and it's an alternate cast. But congratulations, you got Peyton.
Yeah, and I got to think, if you're the guy, if you're the crew, those three games that they do, you're probably not going to get anybody tuning into you. You know, you should take those three games off. I mean, seriously, like, are you going to listen to Lewis, Steve, and Brian? Or are you going to go listen, check out Peyton and Eli? You're going to go check out Peyton and Eli, right? Why not? I mean, you know, so to me, I think this kind of hurts their other product, don't you think?
I would think, but I guess they feel like, you know what? Well, you're right. It is cannibalizing the audience, but if it's only three games a year, no big deal. I guess that's the thought.
Yeah. Well, look, I think this. I think that if they don't try to change how we get broadcast, if they don't try to get us back to Dandy Don and Howard and get somebody up there to say something. Like, I think the sideline reporters should be more involved, but it shouldn't be just reporting the injuries. I mean, like, you know, like they, oh, you know, and all they're getting is from the PR people. Like, somebody roaming the sideline that can listen to what the coaches are saying and then report back and say, look, they're really worried about the B-gap, you know, and they're worried about odd floater or whatever the hell they're, you know, the fans want to know what the hell they're talking about. It's like, why don't they have golfers and the caddy mandatory to have them all mic'd up so that the audience can hear the conversation between the two? Like, I don't want to hear Roger Maltby tell me it's a bad lie. I want to hear what the caddy and him are talking about. Like, at some point, you got to make it interactive for the fans. I think that's what's happened to the broadcasting. There's no, you know, the traditional analyst and they're going back and forth. Like, you got to have a little bit of entertainment to it, too. It can't just be X's and O's. I get that. That bores people. But there's got to be a little bit of way of haggling. And I think I think this is a great opportunity to see a different version of it.
Yeah, we know one thing about Peyton Manning. He's a funny guy. He'll be there with his brother. He'll be comfortable. So I'm with you. I think those broadcast people will check it out. We'll do great numbers on ESPN2. As always, send us your mailbag questions to the gmshuffle@gmail.com or feel free to send us a message on Instagram at the gmshuffle. So ESPN playing the role of Captain Ahab. They get their white whale. How about Jerry in Delaware? Love the show. As a lifelong Giants fan, admittedly, Jerry Jones has always annoyed me. He always seems like he's quick to take praise and quick to point blame. His recent comment about how he would do anything known to man to get in the Super Bowl reeks of desperation. It isn't the first time he's said something like this. Can the Cowboys really be a respectable franchise with him running it? Before you jump in, Mike, they're respectable because how much money they've made. So trust me, I respect the pocketbook. In terms of winning a Super Bowl, that's different.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be real honest here. I mean, they're 8 games over .500 in this century. Since 2000, they're 8 games over .500. Since Jerry lost Jimmy. See, the biggest problem with that press conference to me, it's just a documentation of him not understanding why he won and why he loses. That's really what it's about. I mean, if you listen to his press conference, and he's great. There's no one better at expressing himself. But at the end of the day, he has no idea why he won when Jimmy was there, and he has no idea why he's not winning now. And it's all culture. It's all culture. It's the fact that he's the spokesman for the team that he doesn't understand that makes it hard for the coach to run the team. And it just does. And he doesn't want to hear it. But, you know, and he wants to, he's right. He owns the team. He can do whatever he wants. But clearly this press conference is a perfect indication of not understanding why you win and why you lose. It's the hardest question to answer in sports. It's the hardest one to answer in business, right? Why were we successful? Why aren't we successful? Why did we win? Why did we lose? And if you think it's some stupid reason or, you know, we got a bad call or the refs didn't do this, you're missing the point here. Jerry's questioning, Jerry's whole dissertation is to me an absolute lock that he has no idea why he won. Because Jimmy built a culture around his interference, but he built a culture. And he's yet to build that culture other than the brief time he had with Parcells. And he hated every minute of it. So Parcells left. That's why. It's not really, as Belichick would say, it's not that fucking complicated.
It is not that complicated. And obviously that split with Jimmy Johnson echoes still because the Cowboys have not been back to the Super Bowl since 1995. Pop culture minute, Space Jam 2. Listen, the original was nothing special to begin with. And you can have a debate about who's better, LeBron or Michael. But in terms of acting, LeBron doesn't fare particularly great in the sequel. Hey, my kids enjoyed it, but I found it tedious, almost 2 hours long. Thankfully, it's on HBO Max. So I didn't have to pay $60 for tickets and $40 for popcorn and slushies. Maybe, Mike, for the grandkids, you can get looped into enjoying some of the Looney Tunes. I mean, who doesn't love Foghorn Leghorn? I'll say. Yosemite Sam. But honestly, not a particularly strong film in the summer of superheroes and sequels. What I want to ask you, though, is about Bruce. How was the concert? Did it match the huge hype?
Oh, you know, it exceeded it. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, to watch this man at 71 do this show with as much emotion and as much energy as he does night after night. You know, I wrote in my book that I think Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000-hour rule was really, it's really important. But I didn't think he finished it. And I finished it with called it the Born to Run theory. And I did it because of Springsteen. Because Springsteen, every concert he played in his life, he's played Born to Run. And if you see Bruce for the first time, or you've saw him for 100 times, he plays Born to Run like he's never played it before. I mean, Sinatra didn't even want to play New York, New York. He didn't want to play, you know, My Way because he got bored with it, right? Where Springsteen plays Born to Run with such enthusiasm and such passion that, you know, it's great to have 10,000 hours, but when you lose the enthusiasm and the passion for what you're doing, you're not going to be as effective no matter how many hours you put into it. And this was really a moment to experience his energy, his professionalism, his devotion to his craft, and his ability to write, which is remarkable. His writing is unbelievable. His ability to express himself is unbelievable. And I was up close. I wasn't first row. I couldn't shake his hand. I fell short. I'm a little bit like Louis Oosterhaven in my UPS outfit. Yes. I mean, I can't deliver the mail.
Louis Oosterhaven is the golfer. Some of the guys call him Shrek. How about that? What an insult. They call the guy Shrek because of his teeth and his face. Hell of a golfer. So that's a real insult that you're comparing yourself to him. I know you're locked into the golf, but listen, at least you get to be there,
but
Mike.
I'm a second place guy. I get backstage and he doesn't show up. I just can't get there. I mean, I've come to the realization I'm Louis Oosthuizen. I mean, I'm going to start wearing brown and UPS on my shoulder because that's really what it is. I can't get there. But I enjoyed the shit out of it. It was incredible. The place was filled. There was energy. He was appreciative. And I think really more than anything, I think he demonstrated how much he's missed his connection to the people in front of him. You know, I think that COVID really has impacted his life.
Yeah, say what you will about Springsteen. I know he's not to everyone's taste, but everyone admires his energy and his passion. So I'm glad you got to see him, Mike.
Yeah, I did too. And look, a very disappointing week for me this week. One of my dear friends who I love to like a brother, Mark Bedain, the president of the Raiders, it resigned, and he's going to go on to greater and better things. And I'm sure it's what he wants to do. But I just, to me, Mark Bedain is everything that the Raiders and Al Davis stood for. So a little background on Mark. Mark's grandfather was Al Davis's basketball coach at Erasmus High School in Brooklyn. And through that connection, Mark got a job as an intern with the Raiders answering telephones. And through his intelligence, through his hard work, through his passion, he was able to move himself up to become the president. And I am so proud to call him friend. He's like a brother to me. He gets mad at me when I rip Gruden. I want to be on record of saying that. He's like, he texts me and is like, do you have to say that? You know, he's always, you know, he's on me on that. But I will say that I really admire him tremendously for being able to have this success story that he's had. And he's raised a great family with his wife, Amy, and I just wish him nothing but the best moving forward.
One door closes, another door opens. So clearly he's a class individual. Hopefully more opportunities await. Great stuff here on the GM Shuffle. Training camp's opening soon. We'll talk to you next time.